Welcome to episode 152 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read, I Can't Believe It's Not the Justice League by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. And now, the cast begins.
Hello.
What's up, J. Dizzle?
I already have an Izzle name.
You
and
do?
It's worse than that. Yeah.
What is it?
It's Jizzle.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Oh, Jizzle. Yeah. Oh, come on. That's.
Oh, wait, yeah.
Yeah. That's... And Peter and I hung out with her all the time, so we ended up being Jizzle and Pizzle.
That's fucking terrible. Well, you want to just get moving? Since we're already running late, thanks to me.
Oh, gosh, Andy.
Do this
Jesus
thing.
Jesus Christ, it's fucking terrible.
Man, you guys took lots of good notes. I'm glad I didn't. Right, any or something.
All right, everybody, welcome to another classified episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Sup?
Jen.
Hey.
Word. And this week, we read I Can't Believe It's Not the Justice League. It's a follow-up to last week's comic, formerly known as the Justice League. But this was printed as part of an ongoing series, issues 4 to 9 in JLA Classified from 2005. But don't worry. It's the exact same team that we now know and love. J.M. DeMatteis, Keith Giffen, and Kevin Maguire, with inks by Joe Rubenstein.
I couldn't believe it wasn't the Justice League.
I couldn't believe it either. They're all heroic and shit.
I know.
Mostly.
Well, they added some more A-listers, right? They
True.
Got a Green Lantern. That's A-listy. That's not Nort, you know?
But he wasn't Green Lanterning.
That's true. But he had to have been a Green Lantern. And he was a proper hero in his own right, too. He was Guy Gardner Warrior.
Yeah, this is his Warrior days when he had, like, a yellow ring, right?
No, Warrior was, it's because he was part alien?
No, that happened after this. Because he goes to Quard and tries to get Sinestro's ring. And then the Quardians are like, it's not here. And then it's on Oa because for some reason the Guardians have Sinestro's hand.
What?
Yeah, but wait, no. Because Guy Gardner Warrior is like
this
in
happens.
The
80s. No, dude. Warrior is like in the 90s. Do a Google image search of Guy Gardner Warrior and tell me that is not 80s art. Is not 90s art.
Okay, yeah. A little bit. I already did Google it. I'm looking.
I think David wins this one. My God, that is pure 90s.
I'm pretty sure it's 90s.
No, you're right. It would have to be 90s. Because in the 80s... Yeah, because JLI came out in 87. Yeah, it had to be 90s. Oh, God. That was... this isn't Warrior, though, is it?
No, this is when he's just... So, there was a Guy Gardner solo series. I don't remember when it was. It must have been in the 90s. I found a cover, but I can't read what the date is.
I think that happened before Warrior.
Well, there was a time when he had a yellow ring, and he was wearing his... He had a black jacket that looked like his Green Lantern jacket,
yes.
Remember?
So Wikipedia says, in the JLA Classified-based miniseries, I Can't Believe It's Not the Justice League, Guy assisted the Super Buddies and was revealed to have kept his yellow ring.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
Although the story may not be canon as it contradicts events in the Green Lantern Rebirth. Whatever, who cares about that?
Because this came out after Rebirth, right?
Yes, this came out after Rebirth. That's true.
But it was supposed to have taken place
before it. Yeah.
Like, right after, formerly known as the Justice League.
Yeah.
Which is in... Well, no, that was, like, early 2000s.
That was 03, and this is 05.
So I think this was just supposed to... Well, I don't know when Rebirth happened.
Yeah,
that was the first... That Rebirth was with, that was, John... Or Jeff Johns' first... That was his first Green Lantern thing, right? Because his deal was bringing back...
Yeah, he really wanted to bring that guy back.
Hal Jordan, yeah.
But,
so I think, yeah.
So, Guy Gardner. We have a founding member, if not the founding member of Justice League International. He was the very first leader of the team when it was just him there. Like the first page.
The very first. He's the first guy in the book that we meet.
Yeah.
And now he comes back.
And he's front and center on the cover in front of Batman.
Hell yeah. And he's the one with the talking line on that cover, too.
Yeah, if you want to make something of it, I have the trade next to me. So.
But I love that it's been, what is this, 20 years, and he has not changed his hair.
But he's so iconic looking.
I know.
If he changed his hair, I'm glad he didn't.
He wouldn't change it. It's been, because his hair has been perfect all along. Everybody else has just taken this long to realize it.
You know, Hal Jordan's hair has even changed. Hal went from gray to no gray and, like, back and forth a bunch of times. Right?
It's a lot of work dyeing it.
What's that thing called? Just for Men?
Rogue. Yeah, Just for Men.
Just for Men hair coloring. So let's see. Can we officially say that Guy Gardner was added to the team? Even though he like fights against the assumption that he is. Does he say that he's not part of the team? I know Kara Power Girl asserts that she is definitely not part of the team.
I think he says he's not part of the team either.
And but no he wants
to save them so he has something to hold over them.
Oh, that's right. Since they're neighbors now, they'll owe him a favor.
Exactly.
So yeah, let's what did you guys think of that? Like this beginning with Sue discovering that Blackguard is next door and he's a supervillain and you all need to go punch him because he was a supervillain.
I always kind of thought that Sue Dibny would be like a little more rational than that. Because I mean, if he's reformed and he's not being villainous, which he wasn't villainous this entire time.
Like, no, he was perfectly
done
nice.
Done nothing in this comic. So, like, shouldn't they... Even if he's doing something wrong, shouldn't they arrest him instead of beat the crap out of him?
I know.
She's pregnant, right?
Yes, she is. No, she actually is.
Right, we know about that later, but...
Yes.
But does it make you that crazy that early? I mean...
I don't know.
She was crazy.
We don't know.
She was real mad. I don't know. It was funny, though. It was a good start, just because it's like, hey, remember that this team is a bunch of fuck-ups? Yeah.
What my favorite part, though, about them being fuck-ups and about Blackguard getting a cameo is Blackguard is Booster Gold's very, very first villain. If you look at Booster Gold number one, the first comic he was ever in, Blackguard is on the cover. And it's revealed that Blackguard is part of the 1000. But then when Booster confronts the guy and says, hey, I was Blackguard, Booster says, I never heard of you. I don't know if that's an editorial oversight or if that's actually Booster going, I don't fucking, you're so small time, I don't even remember you.
I feel like that is, I think that was a conscious decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That this guy is that lame. And that these guys are also that lame.
Well, it's a really bad thing for your reputation if even Booster Gold can't remember who you are. And not just because, you know, yeah, Booster's kind of dumb in this, but he should be small-time enough to also remember the small-time villains.
Yeah.
But in Booster's mind, he's not small-time.
No. No. Yeah, I like Blackguard in this. I thought he was good comic relief for the
Dick
5
hurts.
Seconds he was there. Oh, God, yeah. I'll admit, I, like, did a bit of a spit take at that joke.
Well, when they first said it, who's the one that first says it? Sue first says it. And then later on when he says he prefers to be called Dick, and then they notice that his name is Dick Hurts. And then that he prefers to be called Dick, too.
And then Max does everything in his power not to sit
to
call
not
him
call
Dick.
Him Dick.
It's pretty great.
Yeah. So, he's opening up a just plain old bar, right?
Yes, just a normal bar. I think this is the second or third bar that he'll have started and owned.
What?
Well, he owns one on Oa, right?
Yes, and he used to own Warriors in New York. So I think this one is his second, and
yeah,
the
one
on Oa was his third.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. He's quite the businessman.
I love Guy's reveal, like the page.
When he's shooting the finger guns at you?
No, the one before that where where Blackguard's like, hey, buddy, in here, come say hi to your neighbors, and they all turn around. The third panel down, like, the best look is Ralph's face on the far right.
Yes!
It's like, oh, what?
Oh, the gritted teeth and everything.
Yeah.
Actually, I think Blue Beetle's giving him a run for his money. With that, like, oh, shit, face.
Yeah, those set of panels are great, just to see the evolution of their expressions. And the other thing I like about that page is you get Dick's reaction. Like, yeah. Hey, how's it going, buddy? And then he slowly realizes that everybody else is giving this guy the shit face. He's, like, looking around like, oh, shit, fuck, they know each other. But I do love the full pager with him. Shooting the finger guns, looking like he's still living in the 80s.
That was pretty much the perfect reveal.
The chains in his outfit are the best part. It's just like, the way he wears them, it's just the right amount of sleaze.
My other favorite development in when you first start reading this, like, the change from the last week to this week, my other favorite thing is Mary Marvel and Beatriz moving in together.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to work out well for Beatriz.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
I think she's going to want to slap a bitch. She won't. She'd never do that. But
no.
But she will try to corrupt a bitch.
That would be amusing to watch, and if you, like, actually think about being in that situation, incredibly infuriating.
Yeah.
Because it's not like either of them are bad people in any way, it's just they are such opposites.
Yeah, they're totally incompatible.
Well, and that situation brings up a really neat interaction. I think you put in the notes, Jen, when Billy comes over.
Yeah, he was really mean. Like, the way he kind of claimed ownership of Mary, it was kind of, I thought, out of what I perceive his character is. He shouldn't be the sort of person who is like, you can do this and you can't do this, and I don't approve of this sort of thing. Like, that doesn't fit into the naivete he's kind of portrayed as having, because if someone was naive, they'd be more like, oh, I hope you guys get along just swell, right?
Yeah, because I think he, I don't know, I think he's more judgy. Because he says things like, you're not a moral person to fire. And that really pisses her off. But aside from that, like, I think Mary would make the same call, but she's not judgmental in that way. She would just go, oh, she does these things that are not as morally right as I am, but that does not necessarily make her an immoral person. Like, yeah. I think Mary can see that distinction, but Billy, through his previous experiences, is just like, no. Anything associated with these people is no. It is all bad. It is no.
And what's interesting, too, is he wasn't actually on the team at the same time as Fire.
No, that's right. He wasn't.
This is all, like, conjecture and hearsay that he's basing his opinion. He just,
well, because everybody knows about their website.
Yeah, well, she's, I don't know. Maybe Billy doesn't. I don't think he would go to those kind of websites.
How old do we think Billy is?
Okay, 16, yeah, he's definitely 17. The age of a type of person who would go to that website and ignore the age warning. But I don't think Billy Batson would do that.
I agree. I don't think Billy would do it.
I think he just doesn't like her based on the fact that she is associated with people like Maxwell Lord.
Oh, yeah. That's true, too.
He's a dick to Ralph Dibny, too.
He doesn't know him. He doesn't really, well, he doesn't have experience with him from his time with the JLI either.
When Ralph is clear and away the nicest person in this entire comic.
Yeah.
Clear
Ralph
and away.
Ralph is wholesome.
In fact, like, none of the people in that room.
For God's sake, at the beginning of last week, he was doing movie nights. It's two steps away from being a Marvel. If they were doing movie nights and watching Pollyanna, they would be Marvels. It's not that far off.
Yeah.
Sorry, David, I steamrolled over you.
That's okay. I was just going to say that none of the people that are in the room when they're painting were on the team with Billy.
Yeah.
At the same time.
True.
Yeah, that's true, huh?
Hmm.
So he's just being a jerk.
What got me the most was when I think Fire said something like, aren't you Marvels all one big happy family? And then he says, like, no, I am Captain Marvel. And Captain Marvel says no. It's like, yeah. Whoa, dude, you're a douche. Where did this come from, Billy?
God, I really, really dislike how he tries to claim authority over what Mary can and can't do.
Yeah.
Because Fire does it too, but then she recants immediately. She's like, no, I'm sorry, that was wrong. But Billy's just like, he's a bossy asshole.
Yeah, you're right. She's the one to break down first. She puts on the hard chick exterior, but in the end, she's the one who has the most empathy. But yeah. I think that's what makes this comic more interesting than last week. Last week is all jokes. It's like joke after joke after joke after joke. But this week, they have the funny in here, but then there's these moments where they're like, ha ha ha, oh, it got kind of tense right now. That joke went a little bit too far, bro. And you get those tense moments, and those tense moments, like, work so much better. They pop off the page in contrast to all these jokes. And, like, that scene is so in your face compared to with how, say, Fire dealt with giving Mary coffee. Mary, like, fucking goes jittery. She does not use punctuation or periods in her text when they're touring the apartment, you know? And Fire just rolls it off, like, oh, whatever. I made the mistake of giving her her first coffee, and she had, like, 8 of them. Like, haha, that's great. But then you get another similar-ish interaction later on about the apartment and the painting, and it just goes all wrong.
Yeah.
And nobody's making jokes with Billy.
Although, we get a really nice sense of Mary's sense of humor, I think, for the first time, when she makes the joke about how she didn't know Sue Dibney baked.
Oh, yeah.
The bun in the oven. And then she's like, no, it was a joke, guys. And it was like, wow, I totally expected that to be authentic coming from her.
See, this is why I'm saying, like, last week you kind of got a hint of it, but, like, she knows what she's doing. She's not straight up naive. She knows, like, she is actively, consciously trying to be this nice, wholesome girl. And she's smart enough to play off of it, and she's getting the atmosphere, and she's getting a feel for the group and what making jokes is like, and she's getting it. And I love that. Even if she doesn't get sarcasm yet.
This comic, like, this set of issues has definitely made me hold her in much higher regard than Billy. Because I think I've expressed on this podcast before that I don't really care for this, like, super sweet Marvel family crap. But she's likable. I actually genuinely think she's an interesting character.
I think this comic, for the sake of the comedy, kind of pours the sweetness on a little more than it really carries over in the comics. Like, the actual, maybe not, maybe like the Golden Age stuff, it's like this, but the more recent Marvel family stuff is not this, like, saccharine, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen, like, Captain Marvel fight Black Adam and such, but he's still, I don't know, he's got a quality about him that's very innocent.
Yeah, certainly. I don't disagree with that.
So let's see, but the other returning cast members are Booster and Beetle. Do we feel like they changed any from last week to this week?
It seems like they picked up exactly where they left off.
Yeah.
Except they had a costume change. Both of them did. Booster lost his collar. And Beetle, I don't like his reverse color scheme one, and he doesn't like it in the end either. But
that moment was beautiful. When they're in the bug talking about their different costume changes and having their conversation about shit. And there's just one panel that stands out to me where Booster's like, so? And then he does that, like, put his hands out thing, like, what do you think, buddy? And just the body language of that, the art is perfect. Because there's no text. He's just like, eh? Eh? And I don't know why, of all panels in this, that one stood out to me so hard. But that scene is perfect in that, not just, like, the art and the way it works and stuff, but that's, like, a conversation you would have with a friend driving down the street.
Yeah,
but
for
they're
sure.
superheroes.
Yeah.
And it is that scene, it's small, but it goes so far in setting the tone for this comic. The tone of, yeah, superheroes, that's great. This is what they like when they hang out. It's this. This is their normal day-to-day life.
Yeah, I mean, you never think about it, but... And it rarely comes up in comics, but they do... they're not, like, fighting bad guys constantly. You know? They're actual people.
Yeah.
Even Batman, we see a little bit of Batman's real life in the JLI comic. The one we read from week one.
Yeah. And we get a good dose of it with my girl. She's in this too. Yay, Power Girl. Yeah. I like Power Girl's intro when she's just like, she's such good friends with Blue Beetle that she doesn't want to stomp him right when he shows up. And's like, okay, let me hear your pitch. Even though she's already said no, and she knows full well she's not going to join, she's like, okay, I want you to feel like you're doing something. Let's hang out for a bit, and you can talk. And we'll reminisce about the good old days. And you'll think you're doing it for a reason, but whatever. We'll just sit and chat and hang out. If only she knew.
Yeah, that didn't work out very well for her. I like, too, that she actually acknowledges that it could have been her fault because she invited them in.
Yeah, knowing full well who they are and what Booster's like.
So here's a question on Booster. Do you think that... you guys have actually read a lot more of this than I have, like, this series, I assume. So was Booster's kind of lapse in intellect more purposeful, or... did something change here where he actually started being more intelligent for some reason?
I'm fairly sure... I don't know about purposeful. It's kind of like... it's like if you're in a group, like, team project, right? And you know you're like... if it's a group of, like, 8 people, right? And you're all working on this project at work, you're probably, like, the second or third smartest, most capable person in the room. But the most smart person is, like, way smarter than you anyway, so you can kind of check out a little bit and just kind of have fun and contribute like you need to, but mostly just enjoy being there. And I think that's kind of what Booster's doing here, is Blue Beetle is obviously more intelligent and better at planning things out than he is. But, so he can kind of just check out and have a good time and hang out with his buddy and hang out with his friends, but when Blue Beetle gets amnesia... and steps down from that role, he's like, well, shit.
Yeah, and this is something, even outside of the JLI comics, and I include this in the Super Buddies comics in when I say JLI.
Oh, yeah.
You really see Booster change, and this is something that happens between writers. Well, I mean, I've only really read, like, this writing team plus Dan Jurgens and his take on Booster, and I think Booster really comes into his own character and becomes like a real superhero in the post 52 Booster Gold solo run that went from the end of 52 all the way up until the new 52. Like, it was a long running, like, 30 plus issue series. And that's a Booster Gold solo run where he, you know, he basically is the guardian of the time stream. He's like a time-traveling superhero, and you really... He is still the fun-loving guy that he is, but there are some pretty serious moments in that comic, and he... and you see him as a completely different, more mature person. Especially, towards the beginning? There's a portion of the solo run where he breaks his promise to Rip Hunter and tries to save Blue Beetle. Back in time and try to change the past. And it's like this disastrous... he gets to hang out with his friend for a while, but it's totally disastrous. Because Beetle can tell that Booster's hiding something.
Mm.
And it's just like... It's a pretty sad comic.
Oh.
Especially if you're a fan of these two guys. And Booster is a totally different person. And I think that's because he is... a solo run, and he's acting as a solo hero, and he's responsible for he's responsible for his actions, you know? There's nobody telling him what to do. He's making decisions, and then he has to live with the consequences. And it's a different take on Booster than we see here, but you can tell it's definitely the same character.
Yeah, and I think the key is responsibility. Because that's true of his old 1985 or whatever year it was run, when he is the CEO of his own company, and he does a pretty good job of running it, actually, even though he's the same douchebaggy kind of guy. Partially because that sort of mentality flew better in the 80s, I think. You could have that personality and people would believe that you were a company CEO. But we also get it a lot in 52 that we read for the show like a year ago now or something like that. Like, he was just fucking around and put himself all the way down to rock bottom when he hired a villain to fight him and throw the fight. You remember that?
And
But because he's not responsible to anybody at that point. But as soon as he learns that it is Skeets that's infected and Skeets is the one screwing up the time stream, he makes the sacrifice to play dead, fake his own death, become Supernova, and then save the entire 52. Like, as soon as he realizes that it's his responsibility and he's the only one who can step up to this plate, he does it. And I think he has a really good track record of surprising people with how reliable he can be, but he's only that reliable when he absolutely has to be, when there is no other person to help carry him. Will he do it?
It's really interesting. Like, if you think, like, if you, this is to any of the listeners out there, and it's kind of an aside, but if you find any of this comic interesting, you really should check out the Booster Gold solo run that started after 52. It's amazing how much of a key figure in the DC universe pre, like, Flashpoint and the new 52 that Booster is. He's so pivotal. He's, like, everywhere, but he's in the background and. It's really interesting.
The other thing I would recommend is there's one episode of Justice League Unlimited that centers around Booster Gold that I think is really, really good at showing his character.
Yeah.
Because it's a giant fight with, what's his name? Mordru? The Wizard? And all the JLA is going and fighting Mordru. And Batman shoves Booster Gold onto, like, crowd duty, crowd control, like trying to get the citizens out of the danger area. And, like, this big fight's going on in the background, but meanwhile, over in some lab, some fucking black hole is forming, and there's this big old problem, and nobody will listen to him. And he has to go and save the world by stopping that problem. And at the end of the day, nobody believes he did anything, because all the Justice League were off doing this other really important thing, and nobody saw him do a lick of work. So they thought he was just on crowd control the entire time. So nobody believes him when he says, oh yeah, I saved the world today, guys. They're like, oh yeah. Way to go, you did crowd control.
I think that episode has the same title as the subtitle of his comic, of his solo run, which is The Greatest Hero You've Never Heard Of, which is kind of the subtitle of our podcast, too, I think.
Yes, I do believe it is.
But, he's such a key figure in the DCU, and then even in Flashpoint, he's one of the only people other than Barry Allen that, like, remembers what the history was like before Barry Allen changed time. So he's one of the people that helps. It's interesting. He's one of the people that helps Barry figure out what's going on. And he also fights Doomsday again, like he did during Death of Superman.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Seriously, you guys. He seems like such a bumbling character in this, but that solo run is really, really good and worth picking up.
And this is what happens when you ask David or I about Booster Gold. We go off for 10 minutes.
No way. That was, like, super informative. That was great.
Yeah, like, I think I've said this before, but Andy, my first experience with these characters, and Booster in particular, outside of, like, seeing him in the periphery of the DCU, was reading formerly known as Justice League. And after that, I just started reading all these characters a lot, and Booster and Blue Beetle are the two that resonated with me the most, and that solo run of Booster Gold is one of my favorite comics series of all time. It's such a good comic.
Yeah.
And it's weird because he's like a D-lister guy, and he had this multi-year solo run.
Because he's a lovable guy.
And it's
he's D-list, he's not powerful or anything, but everybody,
Dan
like,
Juergens is a really good writer, And yes. he really made that comic what it is. So go check it out. Let's go back to what we read for this.
Let's get back to this comic. So did you get every... The other thing that I really... That, like, one of the other things about this comic that I really love and that really, really gets to me every time I read it is the stuff with Tora, with Ice and Fire and Guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, Jen, since I don't think you know a ton about their relationship as a trio, like, how that worked for you? Like, were you able to pick up all the pieces as you read it?
I'm under the impression that Beatriz feels somewhat responsible for Tora's death. I don't know if that's the case. I picked up that Guy Gardner and she... Either he had, like, really strong feelings for her, or they were definitely an item.
They were definitely an item.
They were definitely an item.
And then it's, like, the one point where he and Beatriz agree on. Because that's... That, like, one-page, like, full-page panel of he... And Fire, like, holding each other and crying.
Oh, yeah.
And that was so sad. And I really like that, because it was a really different side to both of those characters. And it was a nice way of showing, like, emotional depth without making it too gritty. Because in the end, it's like it wasn't even real, maybe, but you still see the psychological harm. So, yeah, I do want to know, like, how did Tora actually die?
Tora died in a fight with, what the hell is his name? It was some, I don't even remember the name of the guy, but it was at the end of the Justice League International run. And
Overmaster?
Overmaster, that's who it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't recall...
I don't even remember what he is like or anything.
But I don't recall the specifics of whether Fire was supposed to be in her place or what, but it being a mistake, in my mind, after it was published, almost like a couple weeks after it was published, Mark Waid, who was the editor of the title at the time, said, that was a mistake. We should not have killed her.
Wow.
We should not have killed Tora. It was a mistake. And so I don't know if them saying it was a mistake in here is like a nod to that, or if it was a nod to what happened in the comics. I don't remember the like dynamic of the fight, and if Fire got out of position that Tora had to go. I don't remember those specifics, and it's going to rattle my brain that I don't until I read it later this week for funsies.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and read it.
But it might have been for that.
Does she ever come back?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, she does.
That's good, because everyone comes back, and yeah. It sucks when you don't get to.
There is one of my very favorite, like, full-page panels of any comic ever is with Ice and Guy after Ice comes back, drawn by Patrick Gleason, and I love that page so much. Anyway, but the full page that we get in here of Fire and Guy clutching each other, I think that's one of my favorite pages in this comic, not just because they're clutching each other and you know, it's drawn really well and all that kind of stuff, but I think it's because you get that page where you can tell so obviously that Beatriz is the one who turned. And Ice says, Beatriz, you always did care so much. And then you get that panel of, like, Guy shaking in anger. And you're like, oh, shit, for a moment. And then there's no blame in him. He does not blame Ice a bit. He just immediately goes to hug her. And they hug each other. And from that page on, not a moment does he ever even hint at blaming her. And I love that. I love that so much.
Yeah, that was sweet.
Because that again, like you were saying, like that's a moment that you don't... That's a side of them that you don't see. And I think it's something like they have these big personalities. I think to cover up who they really are, both Fire and Guy... Like, I think Fire does it because she's maybe a little bit more asocial than these people are, and she's just like, I am just the angry person, so you stay over there, and I will get my social interaction when I want it. And I think Guy is a sleazebag because he wants people to have this image of him that's maybe as more cool or douchey or whatever his concept is than what he really is. Like you were saying, I think you said in the notes, like, he was a fucking lawyer?
Yeah.
Like, he was a social worker. He's passed the bar exam. He's been a special ed teacher. Like, this is a guy with a seriously big heart of gold, but He doesn't want you to know that.
What's interesting is they play him up as a monster somewhat in this comic. Because he's always adversarial. He's Guy Gardner. But there's a scene here where Kara's knocked out and his conscience is, like, talking on his shoulders. And he's, like, actually thinking and considering of taking advantage of the fact that Power Girl is unconscious. And it's like, oh my god, that's supposed to be a private thought that we're seeing. I can't believe he's actually thinking that. So, like, they have that in there, and then very soon after that, it's that scene with Beatrice where he's, like, just a completely, like, emotionally generous person, you know? So, that was a really, I think, powerful contrast, but it was also interesting because it went from being, like, kind of disturbing, really disturbing actually, to being like, okay, he's more human now.
Yeah, that moment's a little, I think that devil on his shoulder is that, like, that, like, really small voice in the back of his head, because the other shoulder just goes, he's a hero. What are you talking about, bro? I don't even have to say anything. He's Guy Gardner, it's a hero. And Guy Gardner just kind of brushes them off, like, quit fucking around, and then wakes her up. And then I like that her immediate assumption is that he did grab her. That is her immediate assumption as well.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree more with Andy that it's more like it's him playing up to his own image of being this, like, sleazeball tough guy when the truth is he's really, like, a good person. Like, if you look at all the jobs he's had, I know Andy mentioned lawyer and social worker. He's also been he was a police officer too.
Yeah.
He's always done some jobs that are, like, helpful. Maybe, I guess lawyer is, it's debatable, but
he was a social worker. He was a positive lawyer.
he's always done things that benefit others. Even though he very much acts, it seems like he's acting in his own self-interest, but all his careers, including being a superhero, have been in the service of other people. So, kind of a weird contrast, right? And it's easy to miss that because of we always see him acting in this sleazy way.
And I think if Power Girl hadn't accused him of doing it, he would have made an insinuating joke that he had thought about doing it, just to try and make himself look like more of the douchebag. Like, I think the only reason he didn't make the comment or he didn't make the joke is because he didn't get to say it first. I really do think he would have been that base.
I would believe that.
Like, I think that when you see it on that shoulder, I think that's you seeing where his douchebagginess comes from. Is the, we should make that joke kind of a thing. But the real Guy Gardner is the guy on the other shoulder going, I don't have to fucking say anything. Let that shoulder go and say whatever stupid shit it wants, because I know at the end of the day, Guy Gardner is Guy Gardner, and it'll all be okay. And he won't really do these things. Although apparently he really did grab Mary Marvel's ass.
Yeah, that was skeezy.
Skeezy and sleazy and terrible. Because that's the thing that Booster Gold had the right mind to not do. Right? Didn't Blue Beetle tell Booster, like, careful, she's 16, and then that was it. And Booster didn't even make those jokes after that.
I don't know. I think that Booster's, he's, like, meant to be goofier. Like, you know, his lechery problems have to do with, like, a 90-year-old woman, right? So, who makes him dress up as Wonder Woman, apparently.
Yes.
Right? That's, like, so awesome. I love that. But, you know, I think he's meant to be, like, way goofier in his advances.
Yeah. More goofy than sleazy.
Yeah. Whereas Guy, I think we're supposed to get, like, a real sense that, you know, Guy Gardner would fit in at, like, a strip club eating some chicken wings or something. Just be like, yeah.
Yes, he would. That is the best description of Guy Gardner I have ever heard. Hanging at a strip club, eating chicken wings.
I can see it. I can picture it in my head, like, right now.
I can picture him doing that with that suit and the chains and throwing the finger guns at the strippers. That's, oh my god, that is the best. If anybody asks me what this character is like, I will now use that description until the day I die. My other favorite part about this comic is last week they kind of just had problems happen to them and all this and that. In this issue, or this comic, literally every single problem they have is one that they have created for themselves.
Yes.
Every single one. They spend the entirety of, what is it, 5-6 issues just trying to fix their own fuck-uppery. Nobody else had to come and mess with them. They're just fixing their own fuck-uppery.
And they
mostly,
can't.
Mostly boosters.
Mostly boosters.
But it's Dr. Fate who has to save them too, right?
Yes. Yep.
That scene where Dr. Fate comes in at the end is great.
Which like is funny because crazy. He is a former JLI member.
That's right. Him and the Gray Man.
Yep.
So why he knows all the better.
You kind of get the impression that he kind of stands with Martian Manhunter on this topic.
Yeah.
He's just like, I don't even want to.
Just no. I don't care. I don't want to know the reasons why. Just no. But, you know, I think it's interesting that it's a manifestation of the problems that Booster and Beetle have, right? In that when they get ported down there, Booster doesn't want to admit it. And I think Booster, to a certain degree, thinks it's Beetle's fault. Like, if you hadn't have been such a dick to me, I wouldn't have had to have gone off dicking around, and I wouldn't have said this stupid thing that got us here. He's like, yeah, it was my fault for going into Dr. Fate's room and assuming all of these things were just knickknacks and not actually mystic devices of great power. Like, yeah, that's my bad, but I think he feels like it's Blue Beetle's fault that he said that he wished they were all in hell. Because I don't think it takes him a long... I don't think he ever apologizes for that. I think he apologizes for going into Fate's room. And I think he apologizes for fucking around in there. But I don't think he apologizes specifically for banishing them to hell for eternity.
Yeah, I think he maintains that like he didn't know it was just a paperweight.
Yeah.
And I mean, it does fit, like, you know, they're trying to portray him more as being childish earlier in, and he's kind of like, I didn't do it, no, and, you know, shifting that blame. And then later in, I think he stops doing it quite as much.
Yeah. The other telling scene that we get in there is with Mary Marvel when she tries to say Shazam, and it doesn't work. And she just looks utterly terrified. It was like, oh, Mary, no, come here, let me hug you. It's okay. It's okay, Mary. Because she is, like, her personality takes an incredible level of confidence. And that moment shows you where all of it comes from. Right? Like, I think, at least I, through last week and this week, have made a case that she is consciously this wholesome. And that she works very hard to be like this. And being like that takes so many... That takes such cojones in this day and age, right? That's like the punk kids who are straight edge, who don't do drugs and don't drink because they believe that is more hardcore than what punk rockers actually do, which is what punk rockers are expected to do. So the more hardcore thing is to lead an upstanding life. And I think Mary is kind of in that vein. But then it's like, that takes so much confidence to be able to pull off, especially as a superhero, to be this such candy-coated person in the face of all of the rest of culture and society. And that confidence is just gone when she's in hell. And that, like, tears her down for the rest of it, too, when she's like, when they have the conversation about, I don't know if I could believe in a god that creates this. Like, she starts questioning all kinds of things that you know are fundamental to her character. I love their trip into hell for this kind of shit.
I think you put it as best it could be put. I got nothing, man.
I don't really have much to add to that. Well done, Andy.
In case you can't tell, I think about this comic book way too much. Oh, but that does bring us to Etrigan. I didn't even mention Etrigan. I don't think he was in our notes. What did you guys think of him?
I love that Ted points out that he's not rhyming all the time. Because it happens so much, like, anytime you read a comic with the demons in DC. And, I mean, there's, like, an editorial rule dating back to, like, the 50s, I think, saying that demons have to rhyme. It's, like, sometimes so strained, and it's like, that's not quite a rhyme. And they usually just gloss over it, but I love, love, love that Ted is like, no, you didn't make it, man. You just... That didn't rhyme.
Yeah.
And Etrigan's just like, whatever. Because it's hard.
Well, and I think they did a neat thing where his rhyming gets worse as he's more stressed out and annoyed. Like, in the beginning, when he's all haughty and confident, and like, oh, I'm the king of this dimension of hell, right? Everything rhymes perfectly. But at the end, where love is winning out, and they're like, and... Who is it? Power Girl and Guy crash the burger place. Like, and everything's falling down. That's when the rhyme starts to break down, too. I love that they go to a burger place in hell.
Yeah.
With the... What was it called? Big Belly Burger? With the stupid fucking hats and the aprons?
Big Belly Burger is just... That's the burger place in the DCU. It's not just here.
But I love.
I think on the cover of one of the issues, it's called Beel's Burger.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it is.
I think that's issue number 6, I think. Yeah, issue 6 of JLA Classified. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah,
JLA Classified.
Yeah. Which they put the A back on. They should have retitled it JLI for this. That would have been.
Yeah, that would have been a nice nod.
It would have been a nice nod, but it would have been really confusing to the average reader.
They could have just, like, crossed out the A and put the I or something.
Yeah,
they could have just made it part of the cover.
That would work. We should be editors. We could do this.
The three of us can split one editor's paycheck.
Yes.
And then we would all be poor as hell.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yay, comics. But, so, what other moments stuck out for you guys then?
Oh man, Stripper Sue Dibney.
Yeah, I was going to say, we didn't really talk about that part too
much. Oh yeah, all the parallel dimension. Which, did this come before 52 or after 52? This is before 52, right?
Yeah, I think this is before.
I think so, yeah.
And then after 52 is... Countdown to Final Crisis, where Mary Marvel goes evil. And that outfit... That outfit looks like it came straight out of this. I didn't realize...
Yeah, they're pretty similar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I didn't even remember that.
I think that outfit came straight out of this. It's, like, so similar.
It is evil Mary Marvel. I think it's how she'd look. Like, I thought it was spot on.
Yeah, Stripper Sue. And then the evil Tora, the evil murderous Tora. It was great, too.
I like evil Booster. Seems to just kind of be the same, but instead of having a power shield, he has a gun, and he's a bartender.
He's, like, gangster.
I think he's dumber.
Yeah, yes. And he's meaner.
Way dumber.
He's like, evil, but they didn't stretch it as far. It's not like... Sue Dibney was a complete flip on the character. Maxwell Lord, like, you could see that happening if everything ever went wrong in his life.
Yeah, this Max isn't too much of a stretch, is it?
I think it could work, like, if he had just taken a really different path. But I can't see Sue Dibney as, like, a mean, cheating stripper. It's just not in her character. I could have seen Fire as a stripper. I mean, she already kind of was. She was a cam girl, right? So, I mean, the only difference is live audience.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, it didn't work for Sue Dibney. It was so weird. You know who she was? She was Harley Quinn.
Yeah. She had the hair.
Pigtails, and she kind of talked, like, with a weird New Jersey accent, it seemed. To me, at least. She was kind of like, you know, come on, honey. Like, I can't even, like, replicate it. But it wasn't her syntax. It wasn't her dialect. It was not Sue Dibney in any way. Oh, and what was up with Billy, like, BDSM Billy Batson?
Yeah, that's exactly, that's all it was. It was just BDSM Billy.
But does he have the lisp in normal continuity?
No.
No, he does not.
Okay, because well, I didn't think so.
No, Billy Batson Captain Marvel does not have the lisp. I don't know, maybe evil BDSM Billy might have one?
He well, does.
He can't pronounce ours.
No, this one, in this, but like... This is like parallel universe evil Mary. And maybe there's like a final crisis evil Billy. I don't know.
The evil Billy in this.
I know, but like...
He has a lisp.
Yeah, but there's not any other evil Billy that also has
a lisp. So you're saying if in the real continuity, Billy Batson for some reason went evil, he might grow a lisp.
Yes.
Okay.
But I don't know that for sure.
I could accept that hypothesis.
One could argue that he's evil in Kingdom Come, and he does not have a lisp in that.
That's true. Well, he had a City Alpha Tau 5 thing in his ear.
Are you making a reference to Star Trek 2?
Yeah, he has one of those in his head, basically.
Maybe he has a Russian accent in that.
Oh, man.
Derailed.
Yeah.
That's what makes us fun.
Yeah, everyone. Fun Star Trek references.
Yeah, and we get Giant Nort, which I don't know what the fuck was going on there, but that was fine by me.
I think they mentioned that he got rabies and turned into a giant mutant.
I mean,
that might have been some hyperbole.
That makes as much sense as anything else. Why not?
Yeah. Sure.
Was Metamorpho ever part of the JLI? I don't remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I always remember him being, like, in the Outsiders, and that's how I always picture him.
Yeah, he was in the JLI, but not that long.
Okay.
Because he's a Doom Patrol regular and an Outsiders regular.
Yeah.
And I think he spent a lot more time on those teams than he has JLI.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing I like about the Parallel Universe stuff is when they get home. That moment where they teleport back into the offices and Guy Gardner is doing the No Place Like Home click. And what does Elrond say? Something like, I never knew you swung that way? Or something like that?
He says, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Guy says, idea? He says that you were of the same sex persuasion. And then he says, your Judy Garland was dead on. That's nice. That was funny.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a Dr. Fate question since I'm looking at the page with him.
Okay.
So is the helmet is called Naboo, right?
Yes.
So does Naboo, like, possess a person? Or does Naboo, like, come out of the helmet?
So if you're wearing the helmet, you gain the knowledge of Naboo, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You also can converse with his... soul that lives within the helmet.
Okay.
So, it's kind of like you can have this telepathic conversation, you have all of his knowledge, but you are more of a host kind of a thing.
Okay. Kind of like Firestorm, maybe?
Well, Firestorm, well,
that's not a host,
Firestorm's
but there's...
a duo. Think, yeah. If we're gonna keep talking Star Trek, think more like a Trill.
Okay.
Or the symbiote. That kind of thing. But instead of having a symbiote, like, up in you, it's just a helmet you can pop off and on.
Got it.
Boom. So yeah, were there any other moments that you guys, or have we talked this thing through? There's so much good stuff in here, though. I love this comic so much.
Yeah, I don't think we can say much about the art since this is the same art team from the last two episodes, except that I feel like this is the first time where we see that Kevin Maguire draws some sad faces. Like, genuinely sad faces.
Yeah.
And he's still a master. I'll just say, leave it at that.
So, what I will say is, this comic has made it onto my comfort media list. And by that, I mean, when I'm really sick, I get, like, a bunch of stuff together, sit down, and... like, I'll watch goofy movies like The Princess Bride, and Time Bandits and Monty Python anything, and I'll read, you know, things that I really think are, like, you know, lighthearted. So, you know, I'll get down with, like, The Hobbit or whatever. This has been added to my list of, like, if I have a cold, it's going to come out with a cup of tea, and it will make me feel better. Mm-hmm. So, like, the tone of this comic is just really good.
Nice. That is a fine compliment.
Should we rate it?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're winding down.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the plus and the minus of reading so many of the same team in a row, is that we can kind of tease apart how the characters change and how the authors are kind of wanting to move characters in a certain direction. Yeah. And add subtlety, whereas last time they were introducing what the characters were, now they're able to add that extra layer with some of these subtle things, like with Mary and Hell and all this kind of stuff. But the downside is there's not a whole lot new to say. Like, the art is still the same phenomenally great Kevin Maguire art as always.
And we're not going to have that issue with the next two.
No, next week is
because it's a big. The tone of the comic changes drastically.
Yes, next week the only person from this team that is on that team is Keith Gibbon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Writing team, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, not it's just Keith. It's Keith Giffen, and then instead of JMD Matisse, we get Judd Winnick.
Right.
And then the artist is different as well. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, let's get down to rating this. How about Jen? You go first.
It's a 5.
Yes.
Anything on Jen's comfort media list is a 5, straight up. So this has found a special place in my heart. I don't know, like, it has a quality of just being really fun, but at the same time having, like, enough emotional depth to be engaging. I think the art is spectacular. I mean, I've said this for, like, weeks in a row already, but the facial expressions are the best, and, like, nothing trumps that. It's just so good, and it gets better, like, every time. Like, the amount of nuance I catch just, like, grows every time I read more by this team, so I love it. This was so great. It was fun. Perfect. 5.
All right. David?
I have to give this a 5 because I gave formerly known as Justice League of 5, and this is, I think, the better comic of the two. You know, I like this one more because it keeps all of the high points of the JLI run and formerly known as Justice League, and then kind of gives us, like Jen said, even more of the same characters. And, you know, I don't know, I don't know what else to add about the creative team that worked on this book, because it's just the same high level of quality that we got in their other efforts. And I think, like I said, this is better than the first one, or better than formerly known as, which I think is better than the JLI, run, at least the first trade that we read. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't really have that much more to add. This is definitely a 5 for me.
Yeah, I'll entirely agree with both of you guys. I think this is the kind of culmination of this team's work through the years. I think JLI it's still a good read. The original run from 1987 on, it's still a good read, but I think what makes it stand out is that it stands out in the face of this resurgent dark comics from the late 80s, early 90s, where Batman gets super dark, Wolverine gets super dark, and there's like a dozen Batman titles and a dozen Wolverine titles, and you get Nightfall and all this other. Everybody is being super dark in the late 80s, early 90s, except Justice League International goes completely counter to that and just throws in shitloads of jokes and makes it not about the superheroics at all. And I think that comic is great for starting the sort of... What is it? The one thing in this comic that bugs me is when they call Guy Gardner an anti-hero, and I don't agree with that. I think most heroes, when JLI came out and today... Most heroes are like Guy Gardner. Most heroes are guys that are douches, guys that are dark and brooding, or guys that have this problem, or this and that thing, and oh, heroes. That the real counterculture is to be fucking Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. To be fucking happy and cracking jokes and pulling pranks with each other. That's the real counterculture in comics. And I think that it started in the 80s, and this comic is sort of the best example of that, where you can get the people cracking jokes, having a good time, get what they're like behind the scenes, and still get layers of meaning and emotional depth in there. And my God, that scene when Beatrice turns around, holy shit. You know, like, it's all of the best of what they've been trying to do for two decades with this kind of mode of comic. And that's why I think this is the apex of it. So I can't give it anything but a 5, obviously. So next week, we're going to move away from this team, because I think, as we've figured out, we've kind of talked them to death and we all just love them. So it's fine. We can move on. So next week, we're going to start Justice League Generation Lost. This was a series of events that happened after Infinite Crisis.
Brightest Day. Because in Brightest Day, Max Lord was resurrected as a White Lantern.
So, for the background, Maxwell Lord discovered that he had these mind control powers after he killed, or he had these mind control powers, helped him sort of take over Checkmate, and then from that position, he was able to get a beat on all of the superheroes, which is what Blue Beetle caught on to, and why Blue Beetle was killed by Maxwell Lord. And then after that, he uses his powers to try and turn the planet against superheroes to a certain degree. And he uses his mind control powers on Superman. And while he's doing this, Wonder Woman figures out that it's Maxwell Lord and goes and straight up snaps his neck. Except she does it while there's a camera showing, and Booster Gold knew that she was going to do that, and he broadcast, not Booster Gold, Maxwell Lord knew she was going to do that, and Maxwell Lord broadcasted to the world, and suddenly every single person in the planet mistrusts the Justice League and superheroes, and that causes them to break apart.
And this is what leads right into 52, essentially.
Yes, and that's what leads into 52, and why in 52 you get the heroes that, you get the Justice League not being there, and that's why 52 is about the B-listers, and not Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman. But he's resurrected during Brightest Day, and his first act after his resurrection is to make everybody forget who he is. And that leads into Generation Lost.
Yeah.
So that's all the backstory you need for next week, in case you didn't have it. That's just the, like, serial kind of thing, like, this leads to this leads to this. So he's resurrected after being a really, really big bad guy, and his first power is the entire planet has forgotten him. Every single person has forgotten who Maxwell Lord is. So yeah. That's what we're reading next week. The first trade collects 12 issues. So Justice League Generation launched 1 to 12. It's a big book. If you want to read along with us, I suggest you start ASAP. But as always, you can download it later if you want, or just listen to it later if you want. But that one's written by Keith Giffen and Judd Winnick. And it was released in 2011 as a trade. I don't remember the singles, but it came out as a trade just 2 years ago in 2011.
Yeah, it was actually released bi-monthly.
Bi-monthly, yeah, that's right.
Twice a
month, whatever the exact term for that is. But anyway, that's next week. If you want to figure out what we have coming up after this arc or any of the 151 issues that or episodes that we've done before this, go to our website, www.atomicpiratesupercast.com. On the right, click on past shows or future shows, any one of those. There's all kinds of links and buttons and things. Click on them, click around, listen. We got tons and tons of things you can listen to. If you have a suggestion for what we should read next, send us an email at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
And you can hit us up on all the social medias, twitter.com/ABSupercast, facebook.com/ABSupercast, or apsupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah! All right, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.